Today's episode of the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. You know, a new set of windows, a new door, it can do a lot of things for you. It can change the look, the feeling, the vibe of your home. Plus, it can add value to your home and make your home more energy efficient. Pella checks all those boxes and then some. So if you are ready for that spring project with some new windows or some new doors, now is the time. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And the Nick Bob Podcast is powered by Runza. We got the new menu item alert that has been around for about a couple weeks now, and you need to take advantage of it. It is the Reuben Runza sandwich. It is officially back. It's everything you love about a Reuben wrapped up inside the greatness of a Runza sandwich. Talking Reuben sauce, corned beef, sauerkraut, Swiss cheese, all inside the deliciousness of a Runza sandwich. So get out to Runza and get yours. Runza makes it all better. Okay, it is Thursday, March 24th, and you know I'm this is a Creighton season recap pod, but as I'm Creighton season recap podcast, and as I'm getting this whole thing ready to be recorded, and I've written like 20 pages. This is going to be ridiculous, but as I'm getting ready to record, all of a sudden there's news out of Omaha that Greg McDermott and a contract extension is going down, and the news just dropped. I'd heard some things that this was happening, and so it officially was made official. Marcus Blossom and the university announced a new multi-year contract for Greg McDermott at Creighton. So before I get into the Creighton season recap in depth of what was an exciting year, I want to get into the big news of Greg McDermott and his contract extension, because it's great news. I, like everyone else, was a little perplexed that this took as long as it did. And then there were rumblings that there was some contract negotiation issues a bit throughout this year. Chattel wrote an article about it. But the bottom line is, all is well that ends well. And this whole thing wrapped up as it should have wrapped up, with a new contract for Greg McDermott to stay as the head basketball coach at Creighton. Which, I mean, by the way, is the biggest no-brainer decision you could make if you're Marcus Blossom and the university. I mean, Greg McDermott's worth every single penny, and the job he has done at Creighton, it's truly amazing. And, you know, when Greg McDermott says things like, quote, "My hope is that this is my last job," boy, Marcus Blossom and the people in charge of making that happen need to do everything possible to make sure that this is Greg McDermott's last coaching job. Because what Greg McDermott has done in 12 years is really, really impressive in Omaha. Second most wins since the new Big East was formed. You had the Sweet 16 last year, which is something that's never been done at Creighton. The Big East regular season champs in 2020. You have 7 NCAA tournament appearances in 12 years. It should be 8 in 12 years, but COVID canceled the tournament in 2020. And by the way, they're going to be like a 2 seed that year. You got, 6 NCAA tournament wins. You have multiple conference defensive player of the years, multiple NBA draft picks. You had a national player of the year. You even now, after this year, have 4 Big East tournament championship game appearances and 9 opportunities. Greg McDermott's been the Big East coach of the year. 11 of his 12 teams have won 20 or more games. I mean, what the guy has done in 12 years at Creighton is really, really impressive. He can flat out coach. And the job that he's done elevating Creighton to a higher level in a variety of ways, conference affiliation from the Missouri Valley Conference to the Big East, to the level of play on the floor, to the level of recruiting, where Creighton signed a top 10 recruiting class this last year. I mean, it's been really, really impressive. Because listen, man, don't kid yourself. This move to the Big East Conference from the Missouri Valley Conference, if you're not careful and you don't have the right guy leading the charge and you make a few mistakes here and there, this move could have been a disaster. Could have been a disaster. Where Creighton is perennially playing in the play-in game, and all of a sudden attendance is dwindling, and it's this could have been a disaster. But instead, it's been a roaring success. Again, Creighton has the second most Big East wins since this new Big East was formed. And that's amazing. More than Marquette, more than Georgetown, more than Seton Hall, more than St. John's. That's impressive. really impressive. And so, you know, I'm just thrilled. And you know what, man? Like, I feel like enough time has passed that I can share some of this stuff now. You know, back in, what was it, 2018, I think it was, when Greg McDermott was offered the job at Ohio State. You remember that whole thing where Thad Matta is leaving and Greg McDermott was 1,000% offered the job at Ohio State. And Coach McDermott called me. It was in the morning. I was getting ready. I was prepping for my radio show that day at 1620. And I thought he was calling me to tell me goodbye and to tell me that he wanted, you know, hey, Nick, I wanted to tell you before it got announced, I am taking the Ohio State job. Like, I literally saw his name on my caller ID and I was like, oh, God. Oh, boy. Here we go. Instead, Coach McDermott wanted to talk about it. He wanted to kind of get my thoughts, bounce some things off of me. And we talked for almost 30 minutes. And, you know, when we hung up, I'm not going to lie, I wasn't totally sure what he was going to do. It wasn't like we wrapped up the conversation. He said, yep, I am definitely staying, or no, I am definitely taking the job. But I wasn't totally sure what he was going to do. But later on that day, it was announced that he's staying at Creighton. And I knew that when I hung up the phone with him, that guy loved Creighton. Truly loved Omaha and loved Creighton. His family loved it at Creighton. He loved it. And he kept on saying, I'm happy. I don't want to mess with being happy. I'm happy. Don't mess with being happy, right, Nick? I'm like, yeah. So when he ultimately turned the Ohio State job down and stayed at Creighton, I wasn't surprised to hear him point to the happiness and of being at Creighton and then to the element of this is home. Thought it was interesting listening to Coach McDermott say that he spent, I think, 18 years of his adult life in the state of Nebraska, because he spent 6 years as the head coach of Wayne State, now 12 years at Creighton in Omaha. So, you know, the dude is an Iowa born and raised, but yeah, he's now almost become a de facto Nebraskan, where this is home. And, you know, I think Greg McDermott, he's got incredible perspective as a person and as a coach. And I think there are two experiences that have really shaped Greg McDermott immensely. The personal experience that shaped him, I think, was his wife Teresa's battle with breast cancer, where that's been well documented. Teresa battled breast cancer. She beat it. And I think that whole period of time has allowed Coach McDermott to balance everything in his life with the big picture of everything. Like, I don't think I've ever really seen Greg McDermott as like the classic coach that's pissy or upset and angry. Like, and trust me, I've been around a lot of coaches where like you can catch Dana Altman in a mood, boy. You can catch him in a bad mode. I remember when I was a GA, man. There were days when Coach Altman would, after a loss or something like that, Coach Altman would come to the office, go into his office, shut the door, not come out till practice. Like, and listen, that's fine, you know, but like Greg McDermott has always just had this good-natured perspective with him. And I think a lot of it personally comes back to Teresa. And then the second experience I think that has really shaped Greg McDermott a lot is his stint at Iowa State. I think Coach McDermott learned a lot in that experience in Ames. I think he learned a lot about the importance of culture and making sure that you get that right. And I also think, to a certain extent, and I don't know this necessarily to be true, but this is just from being around him, like I think he also learned about being careful about chasing the perceived bigger, better thing, or the next thing, or the bigger job, or the bigger paycheck. I think that experience taught him some stuff with that. And so I think all those things have shaped Greg McDermott, the coach, and Greg McDermott, the person. And so ultimately that those things shape who he is today and the decisions and what he desires in the moment and what he desires and what he wants is to be at Creighton. He has the culture right at Creighton, which is a daunting task for any coach. Culture becomes like a cliche buzzword, but it's everything, man. Like, and it is hard to build. It's hard to get right. It can be easy for it to fall apart, and it can be, it's it's one of those things like you, if you never get it right, you're never going to achieve success. And I think Greg McDermott realizes that. And on top of that, you know, he and his family are happy. And, you know, I think there's also an element of Mac is extremely proud of what he's built in Omaha. And he should be. He's done an incredible job. You know, he's done a great job as the head coach. His son, Doug, is the greatest player in school history. I mean, McDermott and Creighton basketball are synonymous now. That is pretty special. And then, you know, I think Greg McDermott feels like he could take this whole thing to an even higher level. Like you know, I said he's a good-natured guy. Like, he may be a good-natured, lighthearted guy that always has a joke for you and always has a smile on his face and all that stuff. But don't get it twisted. He's competitive, and that dude wants to win. And I think his fire to win is raging as hot as it's ever been raging. And to tell you the truth, I think he's as good as he's ever been as a coach. And so, you know, you think about it. You observe other college basketball programs and you observe just sports in general. And, you know, some schools search and search and search and search and shuffle and shuffle and shuffle and shuffle and fire and fire and fire and fire and higher and higher and higher and higher. Coach after coach after coach and just can't find the right guy. Or they find the right guy and he leaves. All I know is Creighton has done it twice in its last two hires for its men's basketball job. Creighton has had two head coaches since 1994. Two. When Michael Jordan was playing baseball for the Birmingham Barons, in between his first three-peat and his second three-peat, since 1994, Dana Altman, Greg McDermott. That's the list. That's pretty amazing. The excellence on the sidelines and the continuity of that spot is something that shouldn't go unnoticed and shouldn't go underappreciated. And I'm going to tell you, I get to see a lot of coaches up close and personal with what I do for a living with Fox Sports as a college basketball analyst. I watch a lot of shoot arounds. I watch a lot of practices. I watch coaches interact with players, how they coach X's and O's, how they recruit, how they adjust, how they run their programs. I get to talk to coaches. And all I'll say this, Greg McDermott, is he the best coach in the country? I don't know about that. But I'll tell you this, Greg McDermott is one of the best coaches in the country. And he wants Creighton to be his last job. Blue Jay fans should drink to that and celebrate. This is excellent news for Creighton basketball in the city of Omaha. And listen, selfishly, it's great news for me that I get to continue to watch and cover a coach who I admire a ton. So, cheers. I got my cold brew coffee right here. Cheers to a new deal for Greg McDermott. It's pretty amazing and exciting news for Creighton basketball. If that guy is going to retire, and this is going to be retire as a Creighton Blue Jay eventually, and this is going to be his last job. Pretty impressive. All right, I'm going to take a drink now. All right, so now let's get back to the initial reason for doing this pod. Creighton season recap. Season's in the books. And wow, what a season it was. Man, I'll say this. I really didn't know what to fully expect this season. I didn't, man. Creighton loses their entire starting five, their top six leading scorers off a team that went to the Sweet 16, and instead of reloading with older transfers, Creighton chose to rebuild with young freshmen and some inexperienced players. And in an era where the recipe to supposed success is to get old and stay old. Got to get old and stay old with your roster. Creighton kind of went in the opposite direction. I mean, think about it. This year, Creighton's core was three true freshmen, a Division II transfer, a sophomore who played under 13 minutes a game last season, a senior who had 13 career starts, and zero starts at Creighton, a senior transfer from McNeese State, and a redshirt freshman coming off a torn ACL who had never played a minute at Creighton. Oh, and by the way, Creighton is also ushering in two new assistant coaches. You look at all that, and that mix certainly doesn't scream NCAA tournament team, great year on deck. But yet it did. This kind of felt like, on paper, an understandable step back transition year. And I you can go check the tape. I thought at the start of the season, I said in my preview podcast for Creighton season preview, I thought hosting an NIT game would be a good year. And instead, well, and then even hell, even a month or two into the season, I said on my midseason Creighton report card pod that I still felt like, you know, NIT bid would be a good year. That's a month or two into the season. And instead, Creighton, who was picked to finish eighth in the Big East Conference, finished fourth in the Big East, played Villanova in the Big East Tournament Championship game in Madison Square Garden, made the NCAA Tournament, beat San Diego State in the first round of the NCAA Tournament in overtime, and the Blue Jays had the ball down one with 1 minute left against number one seeded Kansas to go to the Sweet 16. Absolutely incredible to me. And what's amazing is if you didn't watch the season, you may hear what I just said and think, well, Creighton must have caught a ton of breaks along the way. Actually, it kind of was the opposite. Sharif Mitchell hurts his groin in the preseason, ends up only playing sparingly in six games and has to take a medical redshirt. Again, Sharif Mitchell was the most experienced returning player and was likely going to be the starting point guard. Creighton loses Ryan Nemhard for the season with a broken wrist on February 23rd. Creighton lost Arthur Kaluma for four games with a bone bruise in his knee. Creighton lost Ryan Kalkbrenner and Alex O'Connell in crunch time of two huge Big East games and won them both at UConn, lost Kalkbrenner for the final 15 minutes, and at home against Marquette, lost Alex O'Connell for the final 4 or 5 minutes, won both those games. And lost Ryan Kalkbrenner to a torn knee late in the NCAA tournament first round game against San Diego State and find a way to win in overtime. I might be missing a few different bits of adversity with different moments where there were injuries or different things that happened. I mean, this team fought through bumps in the road during the year. And on paper, heading into the year, certainly had their work cut out for them in becoming an NCAA tournament team. So how'd they do it? How did they do it? Well, what you really saw this year, to me, was two things really shine through. Creighton's culture and Greg McDermott. In my opinion, and trust me, I'm going to give my love and flowers to all the players and different stuff a little bit later on the pod, but in my opinion, that's what Creighton's culture and Greg McDermott, that's what this year was really about. Creighton's culture, which I already thought was pretty rock solid, is even stronger and in a better place than I realized. And Greg McDermott, who I already thought was a great coach, I think got even better as a coach. You know, there's a saying in sports, and in particular college sports, because of the recruiting and all that stuff. And there's a saying in college sports with coaches of, but you know, he's got it going there, right? You're like, boy, I tell you this, Dabo Sweeney, he's got it going at Clemson. But I tell you, Bobby Knight's got it going at Indiana, doesn't he? Like, there's a saying in sports, boy, he's got it going there. Well, if you didn't know, now you know. Greg McDermott's got it going at Creighton. And all that, you know, got it going really means is, I'll try to put it nice and neat. All that really means is the names and faces can change, but the standards and the results don't. The names and faces can change, but the standards and the results don't. In my opinion, that was on full display this season for Creighton. You could feel that with this team this year. Even though they were young and didn't really have any sort of returning leader on the floor with them, the players understood the standard that was expected of them. And they played to it. The effort, the fight, the togetherness, the execution, the unselfishness, the intelligence. You could just feel that this group kind of had all of that. And that's not to say that everything went peachy and went great. It most certainly did not. But even when things didn't go well, and even when this team lost games, you could always see that they had the core principles in them. Which goes back to culture, which goes back to, boy, he's got it going. But what is maybe the most interesting element within all of that is how even the standard and the culture were the same. How Creighton arrived at the end result was a little different this season. Creighton's identity over the course of the last decade had kind of usually been fast tempo, fast pace, tons of threes, guard-led, offensive-minded. Right? That's how you probably would have described Creighton basketball from 2012 to 2021. Up-tempo, pace and space, lots of threes, perimeter-oriented, offensive-minded. Well, this year's team, they weren't as good in transition, although they did push it, but they weren't as lethal in transition. They weren't as good from three. They still took threes, but they weren't as good. They were last in the Big East in three-point percentage. They were front-line led. They were led by their forwards, and they were defensive-minded. Which is just makes this year even more fascinating to me. How Greg McDermott was able to keep the culture rolling with all the new pieces, keep the standards the same, have it kind of look how it always looks, but yet achieve the wins in a slightly different way. That's endlessly fascinating to me. I mean, Creighton became an elite defensive team. It took a little bit of time to get there, but by the end of the season, Creighton was one of the 15, 20 best defenses in the country. I mean, this Creighton team, this is the best defensive team Creighton has had in for sure 20 years. Where you just go back to, I always, you know, KenPom's kind of my North Star with some of this stuff. Since KenPom started in 2002, this is the highest-ranked defense Creighton has had. This is the best defensive efficiency ranking. This is the best effective field goal percentage defensive ranking. This is the best two-point field goal percentage defensive ranking. That's pretty amazing for a program that, again, is known for its offense. And that reputation is earned, right? Like, their reputation for offense is earned. Creighton has had the number one three-point percentage over the last decade. So let it fly, that whole mantra, is earned. But this year, Creighton was a no-fly zone in the paint defensively. And we'll give Kalkbrenner his love in a bit, but it's amazing to watch this program grow and evolve. Think about this. Sure, people remember this. Some people will if they're big Blue Jay fans. After Greg McDermott's first year at Creighton, he had his team, he put 222 on the back of the team's practice shorts. So every day they had to wear 222 on their butts, on their practice shorts. And the reason they did it, because that was their defensive ranking at the end of the year. Here we are, whatever it is, 11 years later, and Creighton's defense finished inside the top 20 in multiple categories. KenPom defense, effective field goal percentage defense, they're top 10 in two-point field goal percentage defense. That's pretty impressive. So all I know is I feel better about Creighton's culture, Creighton's future, and Greg McDermott now than I did at the start of the season. And that is saying something, because I was already pretty high on all three categories. So just to kind of frame everything in a big picture way, that's how I would do it. All right, let's get into the specifics, man. I kind of just decided we'd break the season into the non-conference, the conference slate, and then the postseason, and then I'd get into some thoughts on players and coaches next season, and we'll get out of here. When you think about this year, when you start with the non-conference, here's what stood out to me with the non-conference for Creighton this year. You know what stood out to me was the struggles with the bye games, meaning the teams that Creighton that either paid to come to play Creighton at home, you know, the teams that are the, you know, the directional, the roast beef states on your schedules. One of the things that stood out to me was the struggles with the bye games. Arkansas Pine Bluff. You realize Creighton was down 26-11 in the first half against Arkansas Pine Bluff, opener of, to start the year. Creighton was down 53-40 with 18 minutes left in the game. And somehow won 90-77. Had an incredible final 18 minutes. Kennesaw State. Creighton trailed at halftime. Survived going 1-for-19 from three to win 51-44. Southern Illinois in the Virgin Islands. Needed a Ryan Nemhard floater at the buzzer to win. SIU Edwardsville at home. Creighton trailed 56-40 in the second half and had to rally furiously to win late 70-65 at home. I mean, those are four. Those are, I just gave you four games that could have gone either way. And they were against SIU Edwardsville, Kennesaw State, Arkansas Pine Bluff, and Southern Illinois. Those are four games that could have gone either way, but Creighton found a way to win them, which is a good quality to possess. And I think really served this team well throughout the year. You gained, I think this team was able to gain confidence in having their backs against the wall, staring defeat in the eyes, and found a way to win. Also in the non-conference, Creighton beat Nebraska again, and it was in Lincoln at Pinnacle Bank Arena in front of a packed house. Granted, Nebraska ended up being kind of a dumpster fire this year, but that game matters, right? It's a rivalry game. Creighton was had a whole bunch of new freshman young guys trotting out there, and Creighton won that game. That's always an important thing. Creighton blasted BYU on a neutral floor, which was eye-opening in South Dakota. And then there were the turnover-riddled home losses, where Creighton lost to Iowa State and Arizona State at home and had a combined 35 turnovers in those two games. And turnovers became a theme early on in the year and kind of stuck with this team throughout the year. I mean, I think, they had 20 turnovers against San Diego State in the NCAA tournament. You kind of expect that with a young team, but that was still a thing. So that was kind of the non-con in the non-conference in a snapshot. And in all reality, it was the non-conference performance that kept Creighton from kept them on the bubble late in the year. It was the reason Creighton was never good in the net rankings, because it struggled with bad teams and didn't really have a good win either. My dad would always be like, "Wow, Creighton's third in the Big East. How are they on the bubble?" And I was like, "Well, Dad, they almost lost to SIU Edwardsville and Kennesaw State and Pine Bluff, and you know that who's their good non-con win." And but with all that said, Creighton did still find a way to win a lot of games, which still matters, right? They were 8-3 in the non-con, and two of their three losses were to NCAA tournament teams in Colorado State and Iowa State. Iowa State's in the Sweet 16. Colorado State was a 6 seed. So that was the non-con. Big East conference play. Again, Creighton was picked to finish 8th in the conference. And the tone was set for the Blue Jays out the gates. Creighton started the Big East slate in December playing Villanova in Omaha. And I'm going to tell you, Creighton beat Villanova as thoroughly as they've ever beaten Villanova before. And that includes the Roggy Bomb night in Philly, where that night was just kind of a three-point explosion. this win over Villanova, and Creighton's beat Villanova a handful of times over the years. This Villanova win was just a surgical discipline clinic where Creighton just outplayed Villanova, was the better, more disciplined team for 40 minutes. They beat Nova 79-59. And what was then frustrating for Creighton was it was at that point that Omicron was sweeping the country. And that Omicron wave crashed over everyone and really impacted college basketball for the next month, where Creighton had its next three games canceled. And Creighton ended up, they played Villanova and beat Villanova on December 17th and then didn't play again until January 1st. So what was unfortunate about that was whatever momentum that Creighton could have built off of that Villanova win was somewhat lost. But Creighton did return on January 1st, on New Year's Day, and had an amazing overtime win at Marquette. It was a game that saw Creighton dominate for the vast majority of the contest and then fall apart and almost lose until Alex O'Connell hit a three at the buzzer at the end of regulation to send it into overtime, and then Creighton hung on in OT to win. So after a weird start, with some games canceled and beat Nova and then didn't play from December 17th to January 1st, Creighton did start the Big East slate 2-0. And then the Blue Jays hit some bumps in the road, going 2-4 in their next six games. Creighton got crushed at Villanova, a little revenge on their minds, turned it over 20 times and lost at Xavier. Creighton did turn around and hammered St. John's at home. They won a grinder over DePaul at home without Greg McDermott, who is in COVID protocols, watching it from his basement. And then the Blue Jays lost on the road at Butler and really got thoroughly dominated in that game, which set up a pretty sizable two-game swing for Creighton, in my opinion. The home game at Xavier, the pink out. Creighton gets up 17 at half to Xavier at home. They're rolling. The atmosphere was rocking. And then proceeds to have one of the biggest collapses I've witnessed, where Xavier goes on a 24-2 scoring run to open the second half, and the game completely flipped in a hurry. Creighton goes from up 17 at half to losing by 10 at home. And I'm not going to lie, the season kind of felt like it was in the balance here a little bit. Creighton at this point was sitting at 12-7 overall. They were 4-4 in Big East play and really hadn't played great in conference play other than early in mid-December against Nova. And now Creighton's heading to an East Coast road trip where they're taking on UConn. And Creighton proceeded to win a heavyweight Big East fistfight against a tough-as-nails UConn team on the road, 59-55. And in my opinion, the freshmen, Nemhard, Kaluma, and Trey Alexander, really grew up in this game. Those three guys went up a level in my mind after that game. I remember calling my dad after that game and telling him that those guys showed me something tonight. Didn't think they were good prior to that, but I remember just feeling like, man, those guys got something. It's a huge win. And even though Creighton turned around and lost at Seton Hall on this two-game East Coast road trip, didn't shoot it good at all in Jersey, getting that road win at UConn was huge in my opinion. It got, you know, Creighton picked itself up off the mat after the Xavier collapse at home. It picked up a signature road win at UConn. And I just think that group gained a toughness and a confidence to them after that game. Because keep in mind, I mentioned it already, but that was the game that Ryan Kalkbrenner went out with about 15 minutes left in the second half with a sprained ankle, and Creighton still hung on. So I just felt like that win was a big one. And so then after that two-game road trip, Creighton came home and hit a stretch of you got to take care of business stretch. where Creighton had a four-game stretch where they faced the bottom three teams in the league in terms of the standings. They played Georgetown twice, Butler, and DePaul. Creighton had to take care of business to kind of keep their NCAA tournament hopes alive and afloat, and they did. This stretch of games produced some pretty cool, memorable moments. You have Ryan Kalkbrenner's block shot on Aaron Thompson against Butler at home at the buzzer to win the game. This stretch had Ryan Hawkins going off for 30 in a win at Georgetown. And this stretch also maybe had the play of the year in Ryan Nemhard's transition dunk on Javon Freeman Liberty at DePaul. I mean, oh my God. I don't think I've ever, I might have woke up my son who was asleep with screen. I just because I wasn't sure Ryan Nemhard could dunk. And not only did he dunk, he punched it all over Freeman Liberty in traffic. Just an incredible play. So Creighton had that take care of business stretch where they had to do that, and they did, going 4-0. And then Creighton had a tough two-game stretch with two pretty important opponents where you had Marquette at home, and then you were going to travel to St. John's. Marquette at home was just a big-time basketball game. I thought Creighton played great, and you know what? I thought Marquette played great. Was back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and Creighton hung on to win 83-82 thanks to a Rati Andronikashvili defensive play forcing a turnover on Daryl Morsell late. It was a classic Rati moment where Creighton had fouls to give because they just don't foul. They had fouls to give, so Rati Andronikashvili picked up Daryl Morsell three-quarter court and can get really aggressive because if you fouled, it wasn't you weren't going to send Morsell to the free throw line. Rati heated up Morsell, got him to kind of lose the dribble, and it went out of bounds. Creighton ball. Big play from Rati. Huge win, which now had Creighton sweeping Marquette in the regular season. Creighton then boarded a plane and headed to New York to take on St. John's, and we all know what happened here. This was the game where Ryan Nemhard broke his wrist in the second half. And at this moment, when I'm watching Nemhart, you watch it happen, the cameras pan to him, you see him, he looks right at the sidelines, and he said, I broke it, and you could see it. I'm watching that game in my living room, and I'm not going to lie, I thought, well, there goes the season. Well, shoot. Season's done. That was my initial thought. He was the engine. He was the lead ball handler. He was the eventual Big East freshman of the year. He's out. I thought Creighton was likely going to just kind of limp and stagger to the finish line. But the way Creighton closed out that St. John's game without Nemhard was kind of emblematic of how Creighton would close out the season. Retooling, showing toughness, finding a way to win with fight, and a new converted point guard in freshman Trey Alexander coming into his own. Creighton fought like hell to stave off St. John's and won. Creighton then lost at Providence in a game where the odds were just kind of stacked against him. It was their first full game without Ryan Nemhard. Providence was going for their first ever Big East regular season title. And Creighton shot it bad, and A.J. Reeves shot it great for Providence. So you kind of just go, what are you going to do? So then Creighton came home for its final two games of the regular season. And I remember, so I did both games on TV, UConn at home and Seton Hall at home. And I remember talking to Coach McDermott at shoot-around before the UConn game. And, you know, we were talking about the at-large situation for Creighton. I remember asking him, I said, hey, do you think you're in? Do you guys think you're in, even with the Nemhard thing and all that stuff? And he kind of looked at me and he was like, I think we got to be competitive in these games. And competitive they were. Because that UConn game was incredible. Creighton beat UConn in Omaha. And I was on the call for that on FS1 with Kugler. And that game was a freaking war. It had an NCAA tournament feel to it. You could feel the desperation and the urgency off of Creighton. I mean, it was just oozing off of them. Kalkbrenner was a freaking beast, and Creighton beat UConn to pull off the season sweep of the Huskies, which basically stamped their ticket to the big dance. Creighton did lose a close one at home on senior day to Seton Hall at the end of the year, but it was, I thought it was a really good, well-played game where Seton Hall and Jared Roden in particular just made more plays down the stretch, which Creighton then finished the Big East regular season slate with a record of 12-7 and finished in fourth place. The Blue Jays then turned and headed out east to Madison Square Garden for the Big East tournament, where Creighton started by playing Marquette in the quarterfinals for the third time and really controlled the Golden Eagles from start to finish. Arthur Kaluma and Trey Alexander played great, and they beat Marquette for the third time of the season. And then in the semifinals, one-seeded Big East champs Providence Friars were waiting for the Blue Jays, and it was a total and complete domination, ass-kicking from Creighton. Creighton had the Friars down 30. It was a thorough butt-kicking, which set up a Big East conference tournament title game against Villanova. Talk about a grinder. Creighton couldn't throw it in the ocean, but hung in there, and it took Colin Gillespie hitting back-to-back threes late to win the game for Nova. So Creighton came up just short, but what a performance in New York at the Big East tournament for the Blue Jays, which then set up for Creighton to head south to Fort Worth, Texas for the NCAA tournament. Well, Creighton was a 9 seed and took on the 8-seeded Aztecs of San Diego State, which was a tough draw. It seems like Creighton under Greg McDermott always draws in the first round a tough-ass, defensive-minded team that is just going to grind you and defend the hell out of you. You think about Alabama, Cincinnati, Rhode Island, Kansas State, and now San Diego State. Just seems like it's been par for the course. And this game was one of the more improbable wins I've seen. It looked like Creighton was dead in the water a few times, including at times in the first half. But most notably, Creighton was down 9 points with about 3 minutes left in the game. Creighton lost Kalkbrenner at the end of the game. But Creighton scrapped and clawed and found a way to get it to overtime and found a way to seal it and beat San Diego State, which then set up a second-round matchup against Kansas, the number one-seeded Jayhawks, where Creighton is down their stud anchor on defense in Ryan Kalkbrenner. And you felt like, oh boy, the odds are stacked against him. In fact, speaking of odds, I think the spread was about 11 points or so. So Vegas certainly saw a fairly easy win for the Kansas Jayhawks. Not so fast. Because it's pretty amazing to think that Creighton had the ball. Creighton had the ball 73-72, down one with 1 minute left against Kansas. Incredible performance and coaching job. Creighton had to play small ball because of the Kalkbrenner situation, and it bothered KU. Creighton had to make threes to hang in there, and they made 12 threes. Creighton did a great job. It was a great tactical move from Coach McDermott, putting Ryan Hawkins on DeJuan Harris, Kansas's point guard, who not a great scorer or shooter, and kind of plugged up the lane to protect their lack of a big man without Kalkbrenner there, and it bothered Kansas. And in all reality, Remy Martin had to come in off the bench for Kansas and save the day for KU. If Remy Martin wouldn't have come in and shot it well, Creighton, Kansas was against the ropes. But again, it's just a Creighton had the ball down one, 73-72, and there was an errant pass that went off the hands of Alex O'Connell, went right to All-American Ochai Agbaji for a run-out dunk. And then Creighton got their shot blocked, and then Creighton turned it over again. Alex O'Connell bobbled another pass on the three-point line where he would have been open, and Kansas closes it out. But for Creighton to give one-seeded KU all they could handle without Kalkbrenner, when without Nembhard, and only having 6 guys, speaks volumes about the players, their toughness and their fight, and this coaching staff's ability to adjust and play chess at a really, really high level. So, you know, it's weird. This is just how it was for me. You are usually really sad and upset when the season ends. for Creighton. Like, but I wasn't really feeling like that with Creighton calling the game. I've called a bunch of NCAA tournament games for Creighton, and I really didn't feel like that. I think all you ever want in sports is to play how you are capable of playing, maximize with what you got, and then you can kind of let the chips fall where they fall and live with the results. And to me, that's what happened with this Creighton team, and in this game in particular. Creighton played their hearts out. Creighton was shorthanded, and they just came up short. I think it's always easier to swallow than not playing how you're capable of playing at all. So I felt like Creighton maximized and left it all out on the floor. And that capped off what was a really amazing season for Creighton. This team, man, ended up being one of my favorite Blue Jay squads to watch. They were all fight, no quit, no excuses, find a way, figure it out, stick together, fun to watch team. I felt like this team completely maximized. Completely. Which is a credit to everyone involved. Coaches, players, everyone. The Dick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors, and I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go onto Pella's website right now, you look at it, and how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors. By Pella, won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of waves. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella Windows and Doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. All right, a couple quick thoughts on the coaches, the coaching staff, I should say, before I get into each individual player in the core rotation. Yeah, I've already talked a ton about Craig McDermott on this podcast, but again, it bears repeating. He did such a good job with this young group, staying patient with them, keeping this group confident, figuring out the right lineups and rotations, because some of the best five may have varied from game to game, especially early in the year. I've said that I thought this was McDermott's best coaching job he's done, and I believe it, man. He was awesome. Real quick on the assistant coaches, you obviously had the additions of Ryan Miller and Jalen Courtney Williams, and I thought those two additions were fantastic. Ryan Miller was kind of the de facto defensive coordinator for this group, and this was Creighton's best defense they've had. I got to sit in on a few coaches' meetings, in particular one before the San Diego State game, and man, I'm so impressed with the entire staff. Really, really impressed. Alan Huss, he's a star, man. Huss is going to be a head coach soon. He was the interim coach when Coach McDermott was out with COVID this year. Like, he is he's kind of the offensive minded guy, where they have a defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator. He's kind of the offensive guy, but Huss is just the man. And Jalen Courtney Williams, he's got a way about him with the players that's really, really impressive. Ryan Miller's the total package. I've said before, I'll say it again, Steve Merfeld, I think, is so important as a guy that kind of lean on for Greg McDermott, having tons of head coaching experience. Jeff Vanderloo is the ops guy. Casey Matthews with the film. Like, it's just a great staff, man. Really, really good staff. Tell you what, Greg McDermott, you know, he's got an eye for talent, and that goes for both players and coaches, because this guy has made some amazing hires over the course of his 12 years at Creighton. You look at his coaching tree, you know, Eric Anderson at South Dakota State, saw the year they had. You look at Steve Lutz at Texas A&M Corpus Christi, year one, takes him to the tournament. Obviously, Darren DeVries, the success he's had. I mean, it just goes on and on. So salute to Greg McDermott and the coaching staff and the job they did this year. All right, so some thoughts on each individual players, each individual player. Just talking about the 8 core guys. Ryan Hawkins, we'll start with him, because he was the MVP of this team. No doubt about it. This guy was heaven sent for this team, both tangibly and intangibly. Again, I tell the story, I'll never forget the first practice I went to in October. I sat down, Coach McDermott comes over, sits next to me. First thing he says to me, kind of leans to me. He points at Hawkins, and he goes, I would take that guy on my team for the rest of my career. And I was like, whoa, okay. And it kind of, that proved to be accurate, right? He was vital in leading the young freshman. And it's not like he's just a cool story Division II guy that was a good leader. He can play, man. Division II transfer, makes the leap to the Big East, and he was a stud. He brought a winning pedigree because he won at Northwest Missouri State. I think it's one of those underrated things we just kind of gloss over, especially in basketball. It's like, did you win in terms of projecting the next level? Well, did your high school team win? Did your AAU team win? Did your, for in this case, your Division II to Division I team, right? Hawkins led the team in scoring with 13.8 points per game, and his success and the team's success were directly tied. When he played well, Creighton played well. He's one of the more impactful one-year guys at Creighton. Just an incredible story, was a joy to watch and cover. Just amazing. Division II guy, transitions D1, has roaring success. Alex O'Connell, boy, he had a great year, didn't he? 11.8 points per game, really shot the ball well. Emerged as Creighton's kind of perimeter defensive stopper. He was an excellent defensive rebounder, which is crucial for any good defensive team. And I just, you know, I found his comments on senior day to be really illuminating and amazing. He said that Creighton and playing for Greg McDermott kind of rekindled his love for basketball. That he basically said that he had fallen out of love with the game, I think, when he was at Duke. And Creighton and playing for Greg McDermott helped kind of recapture that love, which is really cool to hear. And you know, O'Connell's a guy that was fun to watch and really made an impact. It's always fun to watch guys find what they're looking for when they transfer. And he just could never fully settle in at Duke. This was really his first year in college where he was a starter and played extended, consistent big minutes, and he produced and had a really, really good year. Alex O'Connell had a great year. Ryan Kalkbrenner. I mean, what can you say about it, man? Like, this guy, 13 minutes a game last year. And listen, he had potential. But I don't think anyone saw this leap coming. Where this guy, he was the Big East Defensive Player of the Year. And really, as the season progressed, and in particular being at Madison Square Garden for the Big East Tournament, I thought it ended up being fairly clear that Kalkbrenner was probably the best center in the Big East. When you take it all, defense, offense, rebounding, scoring, blocking shots, impact, like he was probably the best center in the Big East. And, you know, we talk about his defense, but he emerged as a more than capable offensive player. The guy averaged 13 points per game, shot 64% from the floor. He was a good free throw shooter, too, at 73%. He led the Big East in offensive rebounding. But obviously, defense was his calling card because Creighton's season took off and went to another level when Ryan Kalkbrenner took off and took his defense to another level. I mean, Creighton's whole defensive plan centered around planting Kalkbrenner in the middle of the lane, funneling everything to him, and he would either alter, block, or deter everything. He averaged 2.6 blocks per game, and he did it without fouling. And I talked about this in the middle of the year, but he was an egoless shot blocker. And what I mean by that is he didn't need to wind up and volleyball spike the ball on a block and pat his chest and send it to the eighth row when he went after a block shot. Oftentimes, he went straight up, hands to the sky, and was able to block the ball and kind of almost like tap it and keep it in play. And the no fouling thing is just remarkable because when you're constantly, he was constantly in conflict at the rim, whether it was guys driving into him, posting him up, he was constantly in conflict at the rim and he just didn't foul. The guy never fouled. Kalkbrenner finished, right as of right now, he's 15th nationally in blocks. And it was just incredible to watch his leap this year. And with his injury, you know, it was his injury report ended up being good news relative to what it could have been. I think everyone thought it was an ACL. I was in Fort Worth with the team. I think everyone left the arena that night thinking Ryan Kalkbrenner had torn his ACL. And it turned out to be a sprain, I believe, of the PCL. And the ACL is in good shape after they really took a good look at it with the MRI and all that stuff, which is obviously a big difference in recovery time. I mean, ACL is, what, a 9 to 12 month recovery. And this one, I think, is expected to be about 2 to 3 month recovery. Think by June, late June, mid-June, Kalkbrenner will get back on the floor and slowly start working his way back into things, which is big for his prospects of next year and beyond. I can't wait to see what the future holds for Kalkbrenner. Good Lord, did he take a leap this year. What a defensive player. Ryan Nemhard, Big East Freshman of the Year, and deservedly so for good reason. He was handed the keys to the car and had to run the show from day one. And he did. He was a perfect fit to push pace, playing ball screens, and man, did he have to shoulder a big load. He played about 35 minutes a game, and it was a tough 35 minutes where he's flying around, handling the ball, making decisions, driving into the lane, 11 points per game, 4 assists per game. He's got a comfort level to him on the floor that strikes you immediately. Whether it was the first practice I saw him, the first game, he was one of those guys, like, he looked like he belonged on the floor. Some freshmen look like they're sped up and they're playing too fast mentally, physically. Not him. You just couldn't speed that dude up. Couldn't speed him up. It was a major bummer to see his, you know, his injury, break his wrist, have a season cut short, but he's going to be able to make a full recovery. I think he's going to make a pretty good leap in the next year, which is exciting. Now, he's got to tighten up his turnovers, maybe improve his three-point shooting, but, man, I thought he had a great year, and I think he's got a pretty bright future for himself, too. Arthur Kaluma. I think with Kaluma, man, I think you saw at the end of the year what his potential really is. He was a guy that it kind of took a bit for him. He was a little turnover prone early. Shot selection wasn't great. Always was he was very charge prone. He kind of just would barrel into people. And it was unfortunate because he was getting better and better and better. And then that knee bone bruise sidelined him for 4 games in the middle of the conference play. So, you know, he had to kind of return from that, find his groove again. And then when he did, whoa, Big East all tournament team, really good performance there. And then, let's be honest, if you didn't know anything about anything and you just sat down to watch that Kansas-Creighton game, Kaluma was maybe the most impressive player on the floor in that game. Had 24 and 12 and was awesome. I mean, you see that he's 6'7", he's long, he can handle it, he's a capable shooter, he's a really good athlete. He's the guy with the biggest upside, highest ceiling on this team. It's Kaluma. I think of all the dark horse kind of Big East Player of the Year candidates for next year, I think Kaluma's on that list. I think he's going to be that classic finish the year strong as a freshman and use that momentum into a great offseason into a sophomore campaign guy. Future is bright with Kaluma too. Trey Alexander. I mean, wow, what a year for Trey. He's maybe the guy that I would say improved more than anyone this year from game one to the last game. I think from game one, November 10th, I think it was, against Arkansas Pine Bluff to Kansas in the NCAA tournament, I don't think any Blue Jay improved more than Trey Alexander did. Maybe a Ryan Kalkbrenner you'd throw in there, but I put Trey right there. He went from a guy who I wasn't totally sure how great he was, thought he was good, to a bona fide stud. He had to run the show at the point guard spot after Nemhard's injury. And, you know, he's a guy that's more of a natural scorer combo guard, and he did a great job running the show. You could argue that Creighton was peaking at the end of the year with him at point guard. He's long. He's a good defender. Plays with great pace. He's got a good mid-range game. He plays off 2 feet. Good 2-foot jump stop guy. He's under control. And the thing about him is he's really sharp. He's a smart kid. Picks things up fast. I think that made it easy for him to transition to the point. Was able to run, execute plays, understand assignments. He's a good scorer. He's a good free throw shooter. He's a good defender. He's got good length. He's got to develop a better three-point jump shot. But, man, that guy is a player, man. And the thing that is exciting to me with the emergence of Trey Alexander is, to me, a lot of the great teams in college basketball play 2 point guards. And next year, imagine Nemhard and Trey Alexander on the floor at the same time. I mean, you basically got 2 point guards on the floor. It's kind of like the Tyshawn Alexander, Marcus Zagorowski thing, where you got 2 different guys that can initiate offense, come off ball screens, make plays. I think that's huge. Great year for Trey. He's another guy, like I said, with Kaluma, the classic finish the freshman year strong, ride it into the offseason to a big sophomore year. I think Trey Alexander's one of those guys. Roddy Andronikeshvili. I mean, how could you not love Roddy, right? You talk about a guy that embraced his role as an energy defensive spark plug guy off the bench. And say what you want, he made the game-winning play against Marquette at home with the steal of Daryl Moselle. He made the game-winning or the game-sealing layup against Marquette on the road. And Creighton doesn't beat Villanova at home without Roddy, where he came in and was awesome defensively, made a big three. So even though his numbers weren't great, he impacted winning and losing on a handful of occasions. I love guys that make a conscious decision to just embrace their role and be a star in their role. And to me, that was Roddy Andronikeshvili. Keyshawn Fizell. Keyshawn had a good year, and he's a good player. He just was caught behind a guy that emerged as the Big East Defensive Player of the Year in Kalkbrenner. And the hard part, Kalkbrenner didn't foul, and he was so valuable that you didn't want to take him off the floor. So, you know, Fizell's lack of minutes and lack of maybe big numbers were more about what was in front of him than it was about him as a player. But what was cool was Keyshawn Fizell always stayed team first. He had a great attitude, and that stuff makes a big difference because all it takes is one dude to start pouting for things to kind of unravel. And it was cool to see him step up in the NCAA tournament when Kalkbrenner went down. He made two huge plays with the block and the great hedge and knocking the ball free against San Diego State. And played really solid against Kansas. I've always liked Keyshawn as a player, and I thought he had a solid year. Thought he had a really, really solid year. So there you go. I mean, and as far as the future, man, the future's really bright. Next year could be a special year for the Creighton Blue Jays. Creighton, I mean, they returned the fabulous freshman trio and Ryan Kalkbrenner, the reigning Big East Defensive Player of the Year. Plus, guys like Sharif Mitchell are going to be back and healthy. Roddy Andronikeshvili's got a year of playing under his belt. I mean, all that alone could give Creighton a preseason top 15 ranking, maybe. Could even give them, you could make a case that Creighton's the preseason favorite to win the Big East. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me to see them get that tab. I mean, you bring back Alexander, Kaluma, Nemhard, Kalkbrenner. It's a pretty good starting core right there. Now, Creighton needs to likely add a few ready-made transfers. I think that's will probably happen. The needs are they need a wing that's a shooter. They need someone at the four to kind of fill that Hawkins spot that's a versatile scorer. Maybe that's Jason Green. I don't know. They need a backup five with size to spell Kalkbrenner. So do have some holes to fill, but boy, you got a pretty good core to work with coming back next year. Next year's got a chance to be special. And with Greg McDermott on the sidelines leading this program, Blue Jay fans should feel pretty good about the current state of Creighton hoops. They should feel pretty darn good. So there you go. Creighton season recap pod. Pretty exciting year, man. Cheers to a great season. Cheers to a great offseason. And cheers to Creighton basketball.
A Huda Media Production.